Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. We've got a full house again tonight. We've got Aaron O'Brien.
Hey.
We got Holly Michelle.
Hi.
And we've got Joe DePinto. It's been a long time getting
Welcome.
You from there to
I'll,
here.
Wasn't someone post the meme of
that was
Tilly?
Me.
Was that you?
Yes.
Sing your favorite song. And she goes, it's been a long
that
time.
That would have been amazing.
I was not a fan of that.
And he doesn't sing.
Holly
back.
Would have turned the show off and never turned it back on again.
She would yell no at the television and throw her remote.
And
at
it would stick out of the television.
Rage
Holly
quit.
Really doesn't
Discovery.
Like that song for some reason.
I really don't.
It's probably my least favorite intro, I suppose.
Right.
It's funny. It's a love hate thing. Very much so.
It's weird.
I love it or
it's like I hated it for a really long time. And then the Star Trek was off the air for 15 years. It was like sweetly nostalgic. And, you know, the meaning of nostalgia is pain. And it is a painful song. So it's like, interesting, yeah. Interesting. But,
Dave, we got news that the new animated Star Trek series is going to be on Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon.
Yeah, so we don't really know much about it, but obviously...
They're catering to children who don't watch CBS All Access.
That's right.
Interesting.
So it's a introductory drug.
It's the gateway drug, Nickelodeon.
The gateway drug, yeah. Yeah, I get them all hooked.
I don't know.
Gateway to TNG.
Yeah, that's right.
I was not allowed to watch Nickelodeon.
What?
Because it was just brainless stuff. I watched Star Trek and
I could watch Nickelodeon, but I was not allowed to watch Rugrats.
I beg to differ. All that was very good. Very good.
I enjoyed Rugrats. I liked all that.
I was prohibited from watching that, but I could watch Nickelodeon in general. Just I couldn't watch specific shows on Nickelodeon.
Was all that one of those shows you couldn't watch?
Oh, I loved all that. I could actually watch that.
When I got older, they let me watch it, but. Like, when I was little, Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon were off limits.
Wow. I'm so sorry.
I just hope it's not, like, some janky, crappy animation. I hope it's, like, decent quality animation, because modern-day cartoons are just so ugly looking.
Well,
there's a lot of bad...
Especially Nickelodeon cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Avatar The Last Airbender was good, I thought.
Well, yeah,
it's Japanese anime style. Like, things that fall under that usually are good animation, but American animation is, like...
I have to say, I think I've said it before on the show.
Voltron.
Is my kids have watched Voltron, all 8 seasons of it, and I gotta say it is worth watching. I'm not gonna say it's high minded or great, but it's funny, it's action packed, and my kids just loved it. They're totally into Voltron. So
yeah, I mean the animation on that's more akin to also anime style, so it looks good.
Yes.
It's not like the janky American animation, even though it's done by Netflix. It's really nice. So I Voltron's really nice. I've only watched part of the first season. It was nice looking, for sure.
All right. So that's cool. I mean, get a little something for the kids to watch. We were saying just before we start recording is that the one issue with Discovery is that your kids can't sit down and watch Discovery with you.
Hey, Klingon tits never hurt anybody.
I mean, if my parents were watching it, they would allow me to watch it with them. But I guess my family, we talked things out. I guess that's not the way you do things these days. I don't know.
No, I don't. It's not that. It's more of there's some rough scenes and there's definitely some language.
I mean, I wouldn't care. I'd let my kids watch it because it would open up channels for dialogue and what's okay, what's not okay. You know, why it was bad that their baby's head, you know, was beheaded.
It's not bad because it wasn't really a baby. It was like a prosthetic head.
I don't know. It's pretty traumatic stuff. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, well, like, I mean, if you weren't allowed to watch Nickelodeon.
No,
but the thing is, in America, violence is cool. It's the nudity and the stuff that's like taboo. So like the violent stuff, like people don't really get upset about that nearly as much.
They do.
I don't know.
Well, for parents, for young kids, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, I mean, for super young kids, sure. But I mean, like, not like, I mean, once they're like 10, like a lot of parents don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think after you get like, you know, like you were saying, like 10 and into the preteens and stuff like that, you know, that they, you know, let them watch certain things. They're maybe a little more adult. But anyways.
I fully appreciate it, though, at that young of an age. There's like jokes up there that only adults would get.
Oh, for sure. There's, you know, like I go back to Looney Tunes and there's like all these adult jokes in there. And I'm
so
like,
many adult jokes.
I didn't know that they were in there when I was a kid because I, you know, went over my head. But, you know, like I remember this long, long time ago. My son, we were watching Empire Strikes Back one night. And he just got terrified of Darth Vader. He's just scary. You don't think of him as scary because he's just like part of our, you know, our pop culture. He's like, oh, that's Darth Vader.
Once you've seen the prequels, it nerfs any kind of scaredom he could possibly have.
Yeah, maybe.
Once you see Spaceballs, it's not as scary.
Yeah, right. Well, and since then, my kids have seen most of all the Star Wars, and they've seen Spaceballs. So, but anywho,
when I was a kid, Spaceballs.
And you guys are funny. And then lastly, Shatner said that he would come back and do a Kirk like years later series. And I'm like,
Kirk died in the Nexus.
Kirk died. And
then
honestly,
Picard left
Shatner,
his carcass on a planet to be picked apart by insects.
And honestly, Shatner, I mean, we love you as Kirk, but come on, you're just you'd do anything for a dollar.
But, yeah, you know, as we've seen, death means absolutely nothing in Star Trek.
Or anything. Any series, for that matter, franchise, for that matter.
I mean, like, comic books. I mean, that was, like, the given. But now, especially after tonight's episode, death is meaningless in Star Trek.
Yes, well, we have some interesting topics to go over for tonight.
All right. I think that's all for news. I don't really have anything else.
No, that's it. Not anything that much interesting. But yeah, so we should get into our Star Trek Discovery episode. This is Saints of Imperfection, which is Season 2, Episode 5, and first aired February 14th, 2019. And we
Valentine's
Day!
I wonder if that's why they switched to Thursdays, so they could have a Valentine's Day episode.
I doubt that drove the decision.
Well, it went from Sunday.
Maybe, though. Maybe.
But I mean, maybe it's, does Orville play on Thursdays normally? Because I think they're doing it with, you know, it's one of the two reasons.
I thought Orville is Thursdays.
Yeah, they're probably trying to directly competition each other, which is strange.
Yeah, it's a strange thing.
Well, I mean, being on All Access, you can really play at any time. So it's not really a big deal if they're on the same day or not.
I don't watch Orville on Hulu, too, so it doesn't really matter for me.
Right.
That's true.
Well, the episode starts off with Michael Burnham running through the hallways. And she gets to Stamets Engineering Lab where she's obviously just last episode, Tilly was taken by May again into that cocoon. And we have like a voiceover narration by Michael Burnham and what's going on there. So basically she wonders if Tilly's going to stay alive, and that if she can have faith that that she'll be alive and her friends can help save her. So anyways, from there they're tracking down Spock's shuttle, and Pike tries to call Spock's shuttle, and here we get they knock it out of commission with the torpedo,
type 5 torpedo,
whatever that is,
exactly.
And then when they bring the shuttle aboard, there is no Spock. We get Captain Giorgio,
Dominatrix Giorgio.
Yes. And we get Giorgio in a full attitude, too. So
everyone's got their guns on her until Pike says captain. Then everyone has their gun on her. They put it away, except for Michael, because Michael's like, I'm going to shoot this bitch.
And Michael's still like, I'm going to shoot her. I did like
She didn't switch it to red instantly like she did with Takuvma, so her reflexes are slow for some reason.
I know. I just thought it was funny. And like, Pike just looks at her like, Michael?
What the fuck?
From there, we see that Pike and Giorgio knew each other from before, back in the academy. And Pike doesn't know, obviously, that she's from the Mirror Universe. And later, when they're on the turbo lift alone, she reveals that she's in Section 31.
I feel like she's like a sheriff, just whipping out her badge all the time.
Everybody, like, even
at least even Tyler was just wearing. He was just wearing it. He wasn't like whipping it out like it was like hidden. And then here it is.
Well, for that you got to remember that in the other dimension, she was an empress. So
that's not exactly something you keep hidden.
Now she's not. So being able to pull rank is something that she's going to do because she's accustomed to not having to do that. And now she's like, I'm important issue, and I do this.
Yeah. But yeah, right. Well, I'm sure that's she likes that part of it. But my issue is like Dave always puts out. I was like, nobody's supposed to really know Section 31's a thing.
Nobody, right. And everyone knows. Pike knows what their mission is. I'm just why does everyone know what Section 31 is? How does this become a secret in 100 years?
Yeah.
How do you put the lid back on that?
I don't know. It's so confusing. Unless they're retconning Deep Space Nine out of commission, which would make sense.
They're just gonna. They're going to kill everyone who knows, and they're not going to give Pike his voice back. There we go.
Everyone knows. Tyler knew. Tyler knew before she said anything.
On Tyler's going to die, so.
I mean, we hope, but I mean, if it's common knowledge among Pike and Spock will know by the end of the season, I'm sure, because we've seen – there's a preview online where Michael's like saying, say goodbye, Spock, and Spock does the dumb joke, goodbye, Spock, and they're standing on the Section 31 ship's bridge.
Yeah.
So we know he'll know, which means Kirk will know.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps going. I don't know. I really hope they explain how they're going to get a lid on this in the Section 31 series.
Don't worry. They won't.
thanks for reassuring me.
Yeah. They take Giorgio up to his ready room, and Leland's already there in hologram form, her commanding officer.
Ooh, I don't like on the ghost. Ship.
And they have a little back and forth, a little posturing, shall we say. But Giorgio is free to go. But they're going to give them a liaison, which we find out later is Ash Tyler.
If only they gave Ash Tyler a little cape. Because, you know, the Galileo 7 episode, the liaison was always on the bridge and flipping his cape around. I really wanted Tyler to flip his cape around for being liaison. It's the liaison cape.
He should have a cape. That would be great. You have to wear the cape.
You have to wear the cape. That's how we know like you're the liaison.
It's like when you go to get lobster, they put a bib around you. Except it's the other way around.
All the Section 31 people should wear capes. That's how you know they're Section 31 without seeing the badge. Just capes. Because Giorgio looks really cool.
They're not always wearing their badges. So like, I feel like if they're not wearing a badge, you could probably just assume.
Wear badges?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know stinking badges. Well, Burnham walks Giorgio back to the shuttle bay, and they have an exchange. Obviously, she does not want any Giorgio getting to Spock. She's obviously nervous. She does the old snake pit routine. So, obviously, there's posturing there between the two ladies that obviously – it's weird, too, because we have a scene later. We'll talk between Michael and Giorgio, and it's not – it's counterintuitive, but
yes.
Obviously they don't like each other. Anyways, Burnham goes back to Stamets, and he discovers that this cocoon is basically a transporter from the mycelium network. And because we can't find any remains of Tilly within there, so it didn't just eat her up. It took her matter and took it completely out of their universe.
Moved from one space to another.
That's right.
So we're going to track it.
And then we get a terrifying scene where Tilly wakes up and she's in this cocoon in the mycelium network, and she's got to kind of struggle to get free. May rips her out of it, and they have a great scene. He says, "Oh, we transported you."
That old trick.
That was a great
Tilly,
line.
Tilly is gold. And everything she does in this episode is absolutely amazing.
May says, you've got to help us. We had to kill a monster, so that they're all dying. Their species is dying. So
it's interesting. It seems like they're kind of going back on the whole thing they said last time that the ship was jumping, is destroying the network. It turns out the monster is destroying the place they live, not the jump.
The ship, quote unquote, let something in.
Yes, which is the monster
or Stamets, for that matter.
And I was wondering why isn't May like referring to the monster, what it looks like, or how it's hurting people, or how it's attacking them? Like,
yeah.
Why isn't Tilly asking these questions?
I know.
Good thought.
Honestly, Joe, when we get further into it and we talk more about it, there's a lot of like fuzzy things that are going around the mycelium network that don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
To me. So, from there, Pike tells Burnham that they have the liaison, and that's when Burnham and Ash Tyler are reunited. Pike, just before that, says, you know, what's going on here between, you know, you and Tyler and Giorgio, what's happening? And she's basically says, we'll have to talk about this later because I can't get into it now. So
she's
I'm
like,
assuming
it's a really long story, but it's really not. She could explain it in like two sentences. But Michael Burnham doesn't do brief. Michael Burnham doesn't do brief, though.
No.
You think living on Vulcan, you'd learn brief pretty quick, since Vulcans don't like the chat very much, it seems.
They don't like tell much information. Burnham sits with Tyler, and they kind of...
Nan is looking at him, giving them stink eye. She's very reminiscent of the security chief from the first season. What's her face? The one that got mauled by the... Because it's just like her sitting in a corner
one I
staring.
Hated.
Oh, she's great. I can't remember her name, though. Rika Sharma is the actress.
Tasha Yar?
Hmm?
Are you talking about Tasha Yar on TNG?
No. Rika Sharma's character from season one.
Where she got killed by
Landry.
The
Landry, that's right. Landry.
Landry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's striking Landry chords, like sitting in the corner just staring. That's what
right. Funny. Yeah, just keeping an eye on him. So, in the mycelium network, Tilly is still with May, and while they're going, she's going to go touch a tree, and she says, "No, you can't touch it. It's toxic. It kills us." So apparently, the trees in the mycelium network is toxic to them, and but the trees
the
are all Sagan.
It's toxic to the mycelium.
Yeah, and I felt like a scientist like Tilly would have questioned whether or not her form in the network would be affected the same way that the spores are affected. And she doesn't even question it. And I feel like it would have helped the story build up if it did not affect Tilly. Because then we would have been able to understand that, oh, crap, he's not going to be able to come back with us. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah,
because of the body and how it affects the physical form of the body and then the mycelials, like it just would have been good to know that humans probably could have interacted with it, which they do on the ship.
Right.
They touch it. They pick it up. So
yeah, they pick up the barks. And what she notices is the trees have all been destroyed and they're all like, you know, like shredded and stuff like that. So she also... just before this, the mycelium, like little spores were starting to attack her and burns her hand. And May like kind of calls him off. He goes, "No, don't do that. This is the one I was telling you. This one that's going to help us." So somehow May can talk to the rest of the spores.
Well, she's one of them. She's just like showing herself in that form. What's interesting is May kept on describing this monster. And I was like, I was wondering if the tardigrade has come back because she says that its skin is impenetrable. And, like, it was mm-hmm. eating, destroying everything. I'm like, oh, that sounds like a tardigrade getting fat and happy.
Mm-hmm. This is just having a great time.
Yeah, just, I'm in the network now. This is great.
I can just eat and eat. Yeah, from there, Stamets has this plan where he's going to do a partial jump into the network, and Discovery is going to kind of be half in and half out of the network at that time, and that's way they can actually enter mycelium space for about an hour before it really eats into the hull and starts to destroy Discovery. And Pike's like, this is an insanely dangerous idea, but we're going to do it anyways because we need to save Tilly.
Pike, and he gives so a great, great little,
he gives a great he speech is. Saying how, you know, Starfleet's a promise that, you know, I give my life for you, you give my life for me, and no one gets left behind, and that they're going to go after.
You love me. You love me. We're a happy family with a big purpose.
Were you allowed to dinosaur?
He's a very inspiring captain.
Yeah, captain, it's Captain Barney.
Oh, that would be great. We need a Captain Barney.
Hey, kids. Hey, crew. Sing. We're going to fight some Klingons today.
Barney.
He sings songs in the middle just to get people on his side.
That's how he gives
See,
orders.
See, that's how they should market this to kids.
Yes. You're right, Holly.
Captain Barney. Oh, that would be great. When he fights the Klingons, he sings a song about fighting Klingons.
I bite you. You bite me.
Don't shove this thing up my ass.
What? Anyways.
It needs to be right.
Yeah, you need a modification.
Kids, that's a suppository.
So Stamets goes in with the spore drive. He's going to, like I said, jump halfway. And what's it? Burnham goes into the little chamber booth with them. And this is another thing. It's like, how come the chamber protects them and nobody else? Like, what magic happens within the chamber that all of a sudden they're okay?
It's in some force field.
It's probably where the spore jump initiates. I don't know. They didn't explain.
Yeah, but it would make sense that Stamets could do it because Stamets has tardigrade DNA within him, and it might give him some kind of protection, but it doesn't give any reason why Michael Burnham be all right.
The room was like a magic. Wall. The room is magic.
And when you go inside of that room, it was like a wall. Like later, when you see him put his hand through, it just cuts off. It's like, where's that go to?
Yeah. You know what's a funny?
His hand's coming out in the mirror universe.
Hit somebody on the other side. Ow!
Yeah, it's poking him. It's like white side to get
poking
punched.
Him in the eye. Ow!
Exactly, or on the groin.
Oh god. What were you gonna say? Holly.
Well, if I say it now, it kind of ruins like the episode later. But like, so the wall that they walk through that's in part of that cube, the rest of the ship, the wall begins to creep, but that one stays there. That's I didn't realize that until we just started talking about it. But it probably should have.
That probably should have
been lots of change. There's lots of continuity issues with the way that it's shot versus the exterior CGI scenes of the ship. Very wrong. Mm.
So when the ship makes the jump, you know, and we're sort of like half in the water, half out of the water, if you can kind of visually.
It's what it looked like. It looked like water.
And the way it shifted position was like it crashed into water. It was interesting.
Interesting effect, and Tilly and May are walking along the mycelium network in the forest or what have you there, and all of a sudden the place starts rumbling in a huge crash, and there's all of a sudden a ship just pushing through into their world.
Oh, that would be for me.
Oh, that would be me. And so when she says, we got to go to the ship, we got to see if these people are all right, and May's afraid that Tilly's going to leave him, and then Tilly gives a pinky swear that promises that she will help them, but these people on Discovery are the best people to have to help you with your problem.
And May acts like she doesn't know what a pinky swear is. Didn't she inhabit Tilly? Shouldn't she know what it is?
She also didn't know what crying was, so May's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
I know you look like you're
all
me.
Of her knowledge. Yeah.
I know you like your
I'm sure the only things that she really was interested in is how to help her species. She probably didn't pay mind to pinky swears and emotions.
And dildos.
For this character, May, she's the one for me. I'm going to learn all about her. That's one person in Tilly's life that can get me through this.
Well, the thing that I don't get There's this time limit for the things to eat the ship, but May has got complete control over the mycelium. She pulls it off of Tilly, and it attacking the ship is making it hard for them to help her. So she should have just called them off, and they didn't even mention it or try it, which I thought was kind of strange.
It wasn't. Yeah, it didn't come up in conversation. So
should have. It's like the first thing.
It should have.
Like, you can control them. Okay, then take them off the ship so we can have more than an hour.
Right.
Well, like you said, the mycelium is attacking the Hall of Discovery, and they have an hour. Yum, yum. This is good stuff. Metal filings. So Tilly and May
actually doesn't somebody say that it's not their favorite thing to eat? So it would.
They ate it pretty quick for not being favorite.
They sure did.
That's what I thought too. Like, man, it's going to compromise the whole integrity pretty soon.
This couldn't last very long. And Tilly and May get into the Discovery, and they go grab phasers. And this is where, when they're in the weapons locker, they find that this monster that they're hunting down is within the ship.
That's convenient.
That worked out.
Indeed.
It's also funny that, like, they're deep in the ship finding weapons, and Stamets and Michael have just now walked out of the cube. What?
Right. I wonder if there's some kind of time dilation or something.
But they're all in the network already.
I don't know. Don't ask
well, me. If there is a time difference, when you see the ship in our reality, I guess, crash, it crashes immediately. It doesn't sink in. But then when you're in the mycelial network, it looks as though it's pushing in slowly. Mm-hmm. So,
that's true.
I guess there's a lot of visual continuity issues with what they show. In different
and story continuity.
Have you ever been in the mycelial network, David?
Yeah.
You don't know.
He's like, yeah, I have.
Yeah. I trip on mushrooms every day. I live in the mycelial network.
So
I sink into it all the time. It feels great.
So Stamets and Burnham are tracking a human life sign on the ship. And, by the way, we didn't really say this, but the crew have all been, like, stowed away someplace away from where the ship's going to go into the mycelium network.
The side of the ship that's the furthest away from where it'll be landing.
And the thing that they were worried about was that because in the first season, the Glen, you saw these people that were, like, twisted and fused into the ship hull.
I did like they explained that because they didn't really explain it in that episode what happened.
Right.
It didn't seem like it was super clear, and now it's like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense. It's kind of cool.
But it makes sense besides Michael and Tilly being able to walk around into there.
Yeah, details.
Transition. Details. Well, so Stamets and Burnham do meet up with Tilly, and they can see May at this point. So May is actually a physical, not a mental projection. So she's actually there.
Then they encounter a caveman.
I love it. Yes.
I do admit, I couldn't tell who it was until they were, like, talking to him. Yeah.
Even when the camera was on him, I couldn't tell it was him. Like, whatever. I think they put him, like, in a partial fat suit or something, because Wilson Cruz isn't that big. I mean, when you see him naked later and you see his face and everything, he looks normal. But, like, he looks like he's, like, 60 pounds heavier when he's got the beard and stuff. I didn't recognize him at all as Wilson Cruz.
He looked different. It was very unrecognizable.
And where did he get the clothes?
Well, mycelium. He made it out of weed.
And
hemp.
Made out of weed. Well, it was probably made out of tree bark.
Maybe. That's really good weaving for a guy who's being attacked by spores.
Right.
It's but, like, well, why would they build him up just to eat him up again? That doesn't make any sense.
I know. That we're going to have to get into this. Let me just get through the story. Because this doesn't make a lot of sense whatsoever. I honestly, after ending this show, I was like, what the fuck? So, I mean, they catch up to the monster, which is actually Dr. Culber. Dr. Culber, they're like, that's not possible that he could still be alive. But he looks, like you said, he looks like a wild caveman.
He looks like a caveman. He's all, like, hunched over and he's like all, like, crazy hair, crazy beard, dirty.
Yeah.
Like
and
Tom Hanks and Wilson.
Yes, exactly. From, what was it?
Castaway?
Castaway.
Yeah.
Wilson! Where's Wilson? He doesn't even have Wilson.
He doesn't. He only has tree bark.
He probably used to have him. He left him back.
Aww. Left him back.
Like Wilson.
Aww, Wilson! That's sad.
Was it? Oh, yeah. And then May's yelling out to Tilly to kill it.
Kill it!
Kill it!
Make kill it! Die.
And then, Burnham gets a call from the bridge, and they're like, hey, you know, things aren't so great up here. What's going on? And she's like, well, we found Tilly, but we found Culber as well, Dr. Culber, and there's been a complication. We got to work some things out. So, because Stamets ran after Dr. Culber, of course. And Stamets discovers Culber. He's kind of in a room huddled, you know, hiding. And he doesn't believe that Stamets is actually real. And they have a exchange between the two where their first time third date at the Museum of Modern Art or MoMA.
It was a phallus exhibit.
No, it wasn't. It was de Kooning. Dave, there's no phalluses in de Kooning.
Hey, you never know what happens in the future.
That's true, but de Kooning's dead now, so.
Exactly.
During that whole talk, they were being pulled into this network. So, like, time is of the essence, and they're just lollygagging right
they
now.
They dick around Joe, so much in this episode.
I'm like, the ship's ready to fall apart, and they're like, oh, maybe I'll stay. Maybe you can't stay. Maybe blah, 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 blah. Like,
we gotta go, man. It's like, there's no time.
It's like we gotta go. 15 minutes of exposition. It's like, it's now or never. 15 more minutes of exposition. I'm like, what the living fuck?
I know. Honestly, this is probably the most poorly written episode so far in the series, in the season. So
I wish there's a sense of urgency in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I know. This story is like for later. Tell the story later. Let's go.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to turn into a warped
just
marshmallow.
Grab him and run.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. So, like you were saying, Joe, that the mycelium network is really eating up the hall. And
it's pushing into the bridge. They've got a little bit of a bubble left.
Right, and then we have Tyler using his comm badge, which next gen callback there.
TNG style.
He calls using his comm badge, and calls Leland from Section 31, and we see an asteroid fly in, and it all of a sudden that's just an illusion, and it turns into the Section 31 ship, and Leland uses these tractor beams that hook onto the ship and actually start pulling Discovery. And
they hook. That's kind of like the technology. Were strange. They were like magnets.
Yeah, they were like magnets of some sort.
They were like tractor beams.
That kind of made sense to me. It makes sense how it would tractor onto that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think they just needed a specialized tractor beam for something that was like half and not really there.
Right. Yeah. But that's the first time we've seen that really in Star Trek. I mean, we've never seen tractor beams like that. Usually they're just beams that somehow grab it, the object, and pull it towards it, or pull it along with it.
Maybe these are at least less advanced ones, because I don't think we've seen tractor beams.
Well, they use the tractor beam to pull in Spock's shuttlecraft. They use the tractor maneuver. Yeah,
good point.
That's true.
They use the donut maneuver. Two or three episodes ago. Well, so I mean,
maybe the little things are just more advanced tractor beams. I don't know.
Maybe I don't know. There's no real explanation for that. But
what I was going to say is the technology they used to cloak that thing is like the technology Jayla used to cloak the ship in Star Trek Beyond, making it look like the mountain.
Right. Yes. Right. Exactly. So, yeah, so Stamets, like I said, he follows Culber. Culber is hiding, and they have a talk of basically how they first met, because Culber doesn't believe that Stamets is actually really there. And so once Culber's convinced that Stamets is real, you know, they embrace. And then Tilly and Michael and May catch up with them. And then Tilly's attacked by spores, and May grabs her phaser
Type
rifle.
Type 3 phaser.
Type 3. she's going to kill Culber. But Tilly convinces May that, you know, this is, you can't do this. It's not who you are.
This is going to be bad on your spory soul.
This is going to look bad on your resume. So from there, they can't figure out why Culber would still be alive, because when he was murdered by Volk, you know, obviously he never entered the mycelium network. But then Stamets says, when I was lost in the mycelium network, I saw Culber there. He helped me get out of the network. So he theorizes that when he died, somehow Stamets was transmitting the network, and somehow he pulled through Stamets.
His soul through the network.
I don't understand the reasoning.
Yeah, no, it didn't make a lot of sense either. But the mycelium network then
reconstructs him.
Reconstructed him and then started attacking him like a cancer.
Immediately. Makes no sense.
Right. So like you said, we have all this dialogue, the exposition, and then Section 31 ship has to let Discovery go. But Giorgio figures out a way to give him 3 more minutes in the network, and we get like again posturing between the two, Leland and Giorgio. So then Stamets and Burnham go to the airlock to go to normal space, but when Culber goes to reach across the dividing wall, Culber's hand just kind of disintegrates, and he's like, "I can't. I'm not from this universe. I can't do that." So Stamets is pretty upset. And Culber's like, "You just got to leave me." And Stamets is not going to let him go. And this is where Tilly and Burnham realize that maybe the cocoon that transport Tilly there could use them to transport him into their space.
Which I call last
10 minutes of dialogue.
Yes, and very long dialogue too. And then May's like, "I'm not sure that could actually happen." And then she's sort of saying, you know, also May's worried that because Tilly and her will be severed, and
with each other again. Oh!
But then Tilly says that they'll find a way to reconnect somehow.
All you gotta do is just half jump into the network again,
or just write postcards. Stamets says that, you know, "I'll see you on the other side." So they go into the chamber, and they go to Black Alert, and they jump again, and it looks a little shaky, but the ship makes it through. And then later on, we see Stamets watching the cocoon, and the cocoon starts to light up, and then it disintegrates and takes the form of Culber. And Culber, I think he says Paul or something like that. And so he's alive, and he doesn't look like a caveman at that point. He's got his hair cut, so his hair.
He looks 60 pounds lighter too.
Yes, he does. So
and he's naked. He's like, Tilly and Burnham are just like staring at him.
It's like, "Look at that ass."
That's why Stamets likes him so much. Dang, can I get a piece of you?
Get it, hunk of you.
Vok ain't got nothing on this. No.
Yes,
even with two dicks.
Oh, jeez, dude. So
let's not go down that.
So next scene, we get Pike beams aboard the Section 31 ship, which we still don't even have a name for the ship, so we don't know what this ship's called.
It's called 31.
It's a secret. Shut up.
It's called It's Not a Very Good
Secret. It's classified.
Secret.
The ship is classified.
So when he beams aboard, we see Admiral Cornwell is back.
Of course she's involved with Section 31.
How did she show up on the ship?
All the sleazy admirals are part of Section 31. Yep.
She talks to Pike and Leland and basically said, "You got to work together.
Kiss and make up, like Hugh and Stamets. Just do that.
Do it. You'll be and good. Do it now, in front of me.
I will videotape it. I like
back and forth between them.
And then they talk about the signals that they've seen that left behind tachyon radiation, which suggests time travel, but also says a couple other things, like he said, maybe a cloaking device.
Or transporters.
Transport.
They called it a camouflage device.
Yes. So, and basically, she starts talking about, like, look, Pike, I know Section 31's not what you call the golden or gleaming example of Starfleet, but it's in the Article 14 of Starfleet Charter that there's a reason why it exists. And we're on the same team, and so it seems like they're going to all work together.
We got to find Spock together.
And then Burnham gets a call from Giorgio, and Giorgio wants to be thanked for saving them, for giving those extra minutes while they kept talking.
Could you give me the ganglia that Saru lost last episode? I need to dip them in some butter.
Butter.
I haven't had any kelpie in such a long time. Can I just have those? That's and what you should have used. I can thank you. I can give you Saru's old ganglia.
So she sees, you know, she's kind of like saying, like, you know, Burnham, you know, you got what, it says, how many times have your life has been in my hands? What, you know, you've never thanked me. You never trust me. And she's basically says, Burnham wants to know, what are you going to do when you find Spock? And she says, I want to find him before these Starfleet vigilantes go after her. She calls them cowboys or something like that.
She's talking very much like a sheriff. Of an old town, like trying to get the cowboys and the other like crazy people away. Like I feel like they're very sheriffy in Section 31, which is very strange, considering they're supposed to be a secret agent.
Well, then from there, Burnham obviously still doesn't really trust her.
Dubious,
very much so.
She should trust her.
And then we have Culber's in sick bay, getting treated. And we see Stamets very happy they're still alive.
But his uniform doesn't have the color on it. It doesn't have, like, the shiny silver or the gold. Weird.
And then Pike is looking at pictures of Red Angel, and Tilly's in their quarters, and Burnham comes. And it looks like Tilly's kind of shaken by what's happened in the last, whatever, you know, 24 hours.
I miss May.
May's gone. Oh. She's a pain in my ass, but I love her. And then Burnham goes back to the bridge, and she's kind of just saying that she doesn't really have a clear path, but we all have to make our own path, make our own way. Mm-hmm. So,
episode clear as mud.
So, anyways, Joe, this episode ends, and what was your take after seeing this episode?
Well, I've been liking these the second season episodes so far. This one, I liked it a lot. There was a couple really good parts. I like seeing the camouflage technology. It looks like holographic, like a holographic cloaking or something like that.
Right.
Kind of seeing that technology also made me wonder if they had that technology then. I'm guessing, assuming that they kept it all the way through and Section 31 uses it later on, like in DS9, to transport out people and all that stuff. Remember that episode where Commander Riker has that other, his previous post.
The Pegasus, Thomas Riker, right? Episode?
The Pegasus, yes. The Pegasus. No, the Pegasus, though.
Yeah.
Why didn't Section 31 get that assignment? Why was that to a normal crew? To me, that kind of tied into that, and I was like, because it was a cloaking device, or type of cloaking device. So that kind of brought that memory up a little bit.
Well, the easy answer is Section 31 wasn't invented yet.
I said the easy answer is
Section 31 wasn't invented yet.
Oh, and TNG, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't become canon until late Deep Space Nine.
Well, in way back in TOS, you know, obviously they had the Enterprise incidents where they stole the cloaking device from the Romulans. So they've been able to study that at that point for quite a few years. Why they can't get their heads around how to make a cloaking device, but yet Section 31 technically has
treaty. They're treaty bound not to look at the or to pursue the cloaking technology, I thought.
Right.
Which makes no sense since the other powers have cloaking technology. Like,
everyone.
Why are they tying their hands? It makes no sense.
Yeah, whoever wrote that treaty did a bad job for the Federation.
It's probably Red Foreman.
Well done. Yeah, Red Foreman. But yeah, I liked the episode. I thought they took a long time going to different places, and when they were over on that ship, they probably should have sped it up a little bit. But yeah, it was good. I'm looking forward to the next episode, and I enjoyed the communicator too, seeing that tie in with TNG. Must be like they have the technology at that point, so they're just gonna hold on to it a few years, kind of like the military up here. You know, almost we'll get all these breakthroughs. So I liked it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Who wants to go next? Dave?
I love Philippa Georgiou. I mean, Emperor Georgiou. Michelle Yeoh looks like she's having way too much fun playing the part. She is a gem to watch. She's probably my favorite part. Her and Tilly are probably my favorite parts about this episode. It's so fun watching her do what she does, and her motivations are super unclear. Like, does she care about Michael, or does she just care about the Discovery? Like, the Discovery, does she still just view it as a way to get home, and that's why she's so interested in Discovery? Or does she actually care about Michael? I don't know which it is.
I think that's what it is. I think she wants to get back.
I think so too, but she's also trying to be nice to Michael and appeal to her. So I don't know if like it's both or what's going on there. On the negative side, this is probably my least favorite episode. This episode is just also steeped in melodrama, like last week's episode was, which is just kind of like two melodramatic episodes back to back. Just like, can we spread these out, please? And the episodes are longer. I mean, they are taking advantage of the time a little bit. These episodes are like 50 minutes. They are longer, but they're like using it to like kill pacing. Like the whole long thing with Saru and Michael last time, it killed the pacing. And then the whole like lack of urgency when everyone's about to die killed this episode for me as far as like how it felt in the pacing department. I'm just like, longer isn't better if you're not using the time wisely.
Yeah, I disagree with you last episode, but this episode, like we kept saying, there's all these discussions, and it's like it blows the whole plot line out of the water.
Well, I know you enjoyed last week's episode, but I saw it. It felt like it started getting melodramatic, and then it felt like it just continued in this episode. And then next week's episode is a Saru episode. I'm scared it's going to be super melodramatic again because it's Saru. Like, I like Saru as a character. Like, when he works in an ensemble, when the episodes focus on him, I feel like they're like not my favorite. I hope
it's actiony.
Yeah, I think it'll be action-y too, despite from the scenes that they've showed already.
Well, creatures look awesome. It looks like something out of Halloween, like some kind of like specter or like something from Harry Potter, the Dementors or something. Those look Dementors on steroids. They look awesome. So I'm hoping it'll be cool. I'm hoping it won't be steeped in melodrama.
I want to know why they're drawing them up. They're beaming them up for sacrifice or for what use?
Food. Did you hear part of the next week on Discovery? Did you hear the part about genocide?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's
it could be a prejudice.
Well, genocide might be a reason, but I don't think it is a reason to break Prime Directive. So,
well, considering Archer was Archer and Phlox condemned the race to genocide, basically to genocide by not giving them the antidote, and that was even before the Prime Directive existed.
And it might be why we don't hear about Kelpians either later on.
Yeah, they disappear. They're all dead.
Maybe. And then Georgiou claims all the carcasses and just freezes them and sells them for food.
Yeah, she freezes them like an old person freezing their dinners.
She's like, I need a refrigeration ship. It's got nothing but engines and refrigerators in it. Got to put all the Kelpians there. It's got to last me the rest of my life because there's no more Kelpians.
That's right.
Oh, and then she can raise the price on the Kelpians.
Or she'll just go farm her own Kelpians.
Well, there you go.
If they're all dead, then you've got to like freeze them. Or she could like get their embryos and like just try to grow them. Grown Kelpian. But would they be organic Kelpians then? Probably not.
That's a good point.
Wouldn't a replicator be able to create something like that?
If you program it in, just put some Saru's ganglia in there and it can scan it probably.
It's weird because they always, like, you know, replicators can make anything, but they're always like, oh, there's just slight tastes there. And, you know, like, what is your palate that defined that you can taste things? You know, it's like, give me a break.
Yeah, they're super smart in the future, so their palates are also super defined in the future.
Discerning taste.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the season's starting to get lost a little bit. The first three episodes were super strong. We got like a clear goal, and then
meandering.
I feel like we're losing our goal or what we're trying to do. We've only kind of mentioned the red burst and passing. Spock is still nowhere to be found. Like, they're dragging out the Spock thing really far, a little bit more than they probably need to. Like, it's just like we had three really strong episodes, and then like they're definitely, like Aaron said, they're kind of meandering. Like, nothing's really been happening, even though like the first three episodes were more like missions, like a regular Star Trek show, and then we've gotten less mission-y episodes. I don't know. Like, I feel that both seasons of Discovery have found different ways to waste time. Instead of doing what they were kind of outset to do. So I'm hoping it'll like pick back up next episode. I mean, but overall, I still think season two is much stronger than season one. But we'll see how it goes. What do you think, Aaron?
This was the weakest episode for me. I'm happy Culber came back. I think you're right. I think last episode, I enjoyed seeing the connection between Saru and Michael, but this one as well, you know, bringing Culber back, and the whole thing the whole thing's been very maudlin to me. It's like, you know, it's just not it gets a little like, you know, it's like a weepy or something. I don't know. It's like, you know, let's just bring this out a little longer. Ooh. I understand these characters have their issues, but it's just always like there's always like something for them to emotionally go through, which is sometimes like, yeah, I get it sometimes, but do we have to do that for every character and every, you know? But I guess the first season was so fucked up that they had to go back to it and try to do something about it. The whole mycelium network attacking, I think we've gone through that. Like, why didn't May tell the mycelium not to attack the Discovery? Why, you know, why would they reconstitute Culber for what reason? Like, why did they make him? And then all just of a sudden just to him. Attack him, and he's in. And how the hell did he, you know, I mean, okay, maybe he figured out that the trees were somehow a way to protect him, but it wasn't toxic to him, but it was toxic to them.
And you what know, was okay, he eating that, and that's, drinking all this time? How's he surviving?
His own piss.
I know.
Yeah. He probably didn't need nourishment because his body wasn't human.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe he ate the trees and that he could shit out the bark and then rub it on himself, make it easier to...
And perhaps. That case too, why was he so poisonous to those creatures?
Why was the bark so poisonous?
Oh, that's true.
He was wearing it,
but it was just the whole thing was just like, what? It's just I don't know. It's just it whoever wrote this needs to either come back and do a rewrite or needs to be slapped around a little bit, because it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, that's the problem. Aaron Harberts and Gretchen Berg were yelling at them and slapping them around in the writer's room, which is, this is their last episode they worked on.
Well,
so maybe they got too much abuse and they just didn't know how to write good.
This is when the abuse got rough.
Probably.
And they were like, I don't know. Just they said, we're gonna anything.
Fuck this up. No, put that up my ass. I'm super interested to see how this next episode's gonna go, because this is the changeover from the old showrunners being fired to Alex Kurtzman being in complete control from this episode forward.
True, but my big thing is just that this really starts losing like a real cohesive storyline, like we said before, we were chasing after the bursts. The Red Burst and the Red Angel, and this is kind of getting muddled. We're like, where are we going here? And obviously next episode, we're going to deal with Saru and his race and his home planet. So obviously we're going back there, which will be fun. But again, we're moving away from the main plot of the story. So I feel like we get these like side jaunts and it's like, well, why, you know, I don't know.
In a strong story arc, like we said in season one over and over and over again, like when you have a set number of episodes that's shorter than Star Trek has ever been and you're trying to tell a cohesive story, you don't have time for lots of one-offs. And Star Trek Discovery is still doing lots of one-offs, and they had four episodes in the Mirror Universe. They had a Harry Mudd episode. So a quarter of their episodes in season one had nothing to do with the main plot.
Right. Harry Mudd episode was really good, though.
It was good, but it had nothing to do. It had nothing to do with it, though.
There are allowed a couple of those.
Well, we've got a couple in this season, so we've obviously we've got the
this episode, 14.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was, to me, was probably the weakest. I don't think the storytelling was really tight. I kept on seeing like the urgency of Discovery being ripped apart by being half in out of their universe, and yet they still just yapping away, trying to figure shit out. So, I mean, they should have written that or edited that way differently.
Yeah.
It totally broke the spell every time we had a discussion with, Tilly and everyone else about how to save Culber.
And the thing is, it didn't seem like an hour. The Discovery is not that big. Like, I felt like they should have said something like, we don't have an hour, it's happening faster. Like, that would have made it feel a lot more sense, because like they didn't spend that much time. I mean, like, it felt like a long time because we were waiting for the sense of urgency to kick in, but like Tilly was on the ship by the time they stepped their foot out of the reaction cube. So like it shouldn't have taken an hour for them to meet up, find Culber, and then get back.
I figured there was missing time that we just edited out that you don't get to see. So,
but sure, but still, they're on the ship. It doesn't take that long to get around. Like they didn't have to like leave the ship and look through the network for her. Like, she was on the ship by the time they stepped out of the cube.
And they just estimated it was going to be an hour, because it looked like they were that hole was corroding at a much quicker rate than just an hour of time.
Yeah, but they didn't say. There was no line of dialogue saying, "Oh, no, this is happening quicker than an hour." That's true. Know what I mean? Like, there's no they were raising the stakes, but they didn't raise it in a way that had much meaning.
And they eat so much of that hole away that I was just wondering, like, when they actually came back in the normal universe, how did it even make it? How did it have the strength to like the whole integrity to make that jump?
It didn't even look like it was spinning at an appropriate rate for them to make the jump. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
This episode had some issues. Holly, what about you? How did you feel about this episode?
A lot of the same feelings as you guys. As far as them being in the network, it was painful to watch. And I can't decide if it was because of the back and forth between the network and then our reality. Maybe because it felt like the mycelium was taking the ship too quickly. I really have no idea. But I did feel like they had a good sense of urgency, but because everything felt rushed, but there was lack of communication about how they needed to pick up the pace, like, I think that's what was so painful about it. I think the urgency was there, but it wasn't communicated well to each other or to us as an audience,
Both.
Another thing I have to say is I've been feeling it for a couple episodes, but I really love Pike. I feel like he's extremely observant, respectful of his crew, and his humor just makes me happy.
Pike is great.
And then, yeah. And then, similar to what David said, I still don't know how I feel about Giorgio. She does seem genuinely interested in Michael's future and seems like she truly wants her faith and trust, but I can't tell if she's putting on a show for everyone else or if she's putting on a show for Michael. So that's really fun and intriguing, so I look forward to see where that's going. And I also agree that this episode didn't really touch on the anomalies, but we did gain back Culber. I do feel a little differently, though, about like how far the show has come, because we already know of four anomalies, and this is the fifth episode. So we've had an anomaly each episode, and this is the first one we haven't had one.
Well, so other than Culber coming and being reconstituted.
But I don't know if that's an anomaly. I'm not really convinced, even though the tree bark was like turning red and stuff. What?
It's fucking weird.
It is fucking weird.
I don't know.
But like David said, there are 17 episodes. Is that what you said?
There's only 14 this season.
14 episodes. So I think there's time.
I guess I'm in the minority, or I don't like that they brought Culver back because like. None of the deaths have any meaning. Like, you know, they killed Giorgio and they brought Mira Giorgio back so Giorgio can be with us.
I'm with you, David.
Nobody that's died that was like a big part, I guess, except for Lorca. But we still don't know what happened to our Lorca. So Lorca, I mean, I wouldn't.
Yeah, Lorca might.
It literally would not surprise me at all if our Lorca walks on the bridge as the last scene of the last episode of this thing. Because that's just how Discovery.
I'm ready to captain again.
Yeah, that's how Discovery's been going. Like, maybe that's the captain
just
who was on.
Want someone important to die.
He wasn't even important. He was like a C character in season one. He was Stamets's, you know, husband, boyfriend, or whatever he was, partner. But like, he was a C character. He was barely in the show. He wasn't that important. And the fact that they're like that none of the deaths are sticking, and the fact
you know, he was.
It would be so Discovery for Lorca to be on Vulcan, and they got him back somehow, and like they're gonna go to Vulcan at the end of season two, and then they're gonna pick up old Lorca, and it would be hilarious, and that would not surprise me at all. It would actually surprise me if that didn't happen.
I think you and I talked about this when you had me watch Discovery One and review it, or Discovery Season One. I think he was important, and I think the reason why was because he was Stamets' support system. Through the entire thing, we wouldn't have had such a cooperative Stamets without him. So, I mean...
Well, I'm not saying he's not important, but I just mean like... I'm just talking about like his screen time. As far as like a caliber of character he was, but granted, most characters didn't have a lot of screen time in season one. So I'm just talking about from
important.
Like a... Yeah, but I mean, like, from the main cast list, he's not, like, up there as far as, like, screen. I mean, that's what I meant by important, like, lots of screen time, lots of dialogue, yes. Stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Well, and especially the way he came back tonight, like, there was a point where I thought that, oh, okay, since he can't go through that, get back to the regular universe, this might be it for him. This might be the final goodbye, and we'll see him die. And when they didn't do that, I was like, what the hell? How does he, like, keep coming back time after time? Like... I was just saying, I agree with David. I like when someone, like, if they're going to kill someone off, I want him to stay dead. I don't like, I don't mind flashbacks and all that, but it seems like he's going to be back part of the crew again. Who knows?
Like, yeah. There's just no stakes in this show, which is kind of disappointing. Like, we talked about this, like, before season one came up. I was hoping this would be very much Game of Thrones in space, and instead it's like Marvel Comics in space, where no one who dies stays dead.
Started off that way in season one. You saw a bunch of people die.
Yeah, a bunch of important people die, and then they all came back, except for Landry and Lorca. But Landry also wasn't very important, because she had very small part. So mm-hmm. I don't know, like the only
but
big person
see
is
them
Lorca.
Die though in the alternate universe, you saw them die as well too, though, like other crew members over again, and it just seemed like there was a lot more actual death in it. Whether or not they came back later on, you knew they were dead though for sure. Like there's a knife through your heart or whatever. It's pretty clear.
But Holly, what else were you going to say? I know you were kind of mid sentence.
That's okay. I don't know. I look forward to next week's episode. I'm waiting to piece together all of the anomalies, and I've got some curiosities about other things, but I kind of want to look into them before I kind of talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Holly,
I don't know.
They did mention that the red particles disappearing could possibly have time travel, and that was your thing last week. So I mean, maybe you might be right about them being anomalies through time, which I was not agreeing with last week. But now that they mentioned Chronotons, they mentioned something tachyons that have to do with time travel. So maybe you are right, and that these things are anomalies through time.
Yeah, which I think would be really cool. So I'm curious what we have. We've got a couple episodes left. Just a couple, just a few. So
nine
I'm
more.
Excited.
There's a couple of thoughts here. The tachyons. I mean, would that mean that if it is time travel, could that mean that they are going to jump into a different time period? By the
a
end
thousand
of next
years
season,
in the future.
Maybe.
Yes. Could they possibly? This have something to do with the Romulans?
Yes. That's where I was going.
Because they don't use a warp core. What do they use? The anomaly.
They use a singularity.
Singularity. Yeah. Thank you. They use a singularity as a propulsion unit. So that might be something transporting. I mean, and they talked about a cloaking device, right? So there's some things there, you know, going on.
Yeah, when they mentioned tachyons, my mind immediately went to a cloaking device, right. And when the other captain was like time travel, like oh. And then Pike said it. Well, it could be the cloaking device. I was like, good for him for mentioning it. But so that I think it's a possibility that it could be the Romulans. So we haven't heard about them yet, have we?
No.
Canon wise, we probably won't hear anything from the Romulans if they do it right, because when we get a Balance of Terror, there has been over what they said 100 years. Since we've had contact
since the Romulan War, and we've never even saw their faces, even in the Romulan War. So I don't think Romulans will be a part of Discovery.
Who knows? Because Discovery just seems to want to go wherever it wants to go. So
it's true.
Secondly, I just want to bring out a point that a lot of symbology, I was just thinking. There's a lot of Christian symbology through this whole season. Symbolism.
Is symbolism the word?
Yeah, that's right.
But Synthaholics, we enjoy symbology.
Oh, I just my sorry, my brain. Sorry.
No, you're right. You're right.
I was just making a joke.
It went over my head. Sorry.
But my point being is that Giorgio, she's referred to a snake in a snake pit. She eats the apple. And so is she kind of the Satan temptress or the snake in the Garden of Eden kind of thing? So,
this season is very much like supposed to be Michael struggling with science versus religion, which I guess is what a lot of her monologues were about in this episode.
She's talking about her faith. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's like faith versus science. And that's what the writer said that she's going to be struggling with this season. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot more symbolism and symbology and all that stuff for Michael to struggle with, which I hope next season's not the Michael Burnham show. I really want it to be more of a collaboration like Star Trek has been before in the past. I miss Captain's logs. We get so few. I don't think we've heard Pike give one log, which is kind of sad.
We've got to Burnham give a log.
Yeah. But I want less Burnham and more of everyone else. Personally,
yeah, I do like Pike. I love Pike. The way he's acting.
Yes, I love him.
He's more of a very good Pike.
Trekkie captain, like the epitome of a Star Trek captain, or a Federation captain. You know, not like or Starfleet. Excuse me, not just some jerk that we've been not jerk,
some
but
pompous ass.
Yeah, someone who's not really.
I'm still wanting. Background on Pike, why he went from being so bitter to like happy go lucky, because his attitude's changed
how
a lot.
He gets injured.
So is David.
I don't think we're going to see that for this. I could be wrong, but
we've got to see that.
No, it's way too early.
Not now, but eventually on Discovery.
Yeah,
I mean, Discovery.
No, because we won't see that. That only happens like right before or sometime during TOS. That's during the Menagerie, just before the events of the Menagerie.
Because whatever Spock finds out what happened to Pike, he's like, oh, I'm going to take him. I'm going to go rescue Pike and take him to the planet so he can enjoy life and not be a vegetable.
To the Yeah, to the Talosians, right.
So that accident must have happened very shortly before Spock did what he did.
But if you want to see Spock go rogue, I mean, definitely go watch part one and part two of the Menagerie, because that's when Spock steals the Enterprise. So it's great. Yeah.
Because he loves his Captain Pike.
He does love Pike. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of mixed metaphors and interesting background that they're layering into this. I just think this episode itself was not written very well.
No, I agree. But there was a cool couple throwbacks, so.
Yeah.
Like, made connections with that, I don't know, the TNG device. That was kind of cool, the communicating device. I like seeing that. But
yeah,
all in all, probably the weakest episode so far this season.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great callbacks. Mm-hmm. Tilly is amazing. Giorgio's amazing. And more
Giorgio, I loved it in this one, yeah.
And Pike is amazing. Let's get more of those three going forward. I could
like use more of that. I like how Giorgio blackmailed the other captain to get her way to help the Discovery.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was pretty good.
She is so badass. I love Michelle Yeoh. She is so good.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Yeah, I wish the mycelium stuff would be a little more explained, or if not, if they're not going to explain it well, don't explain it at all.
Yeah.
Don't halfway do it. Oh, I mean, like maybe they'll flesh it out next season. Because I mean, we just finally got the answer to what happened on the Glen this episode. So it took us a season, a whole season of the show before we got the answer to exactly what happened with that. Because they said something, but it didn't make any sense in season one. Right. So
and so I saw that somewhere. Explain to me what the Glen is, or the USS Glen. Was that on TOS?
No, that was the
third episode of Discovery, I think.
Yeah, it's a sister ship of Discovery. It was the ship that they found the tardigrade on.
Oh, gotcha,
all the people looked like they were like twisted up, like Laffy Taffy.
Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't know the name of the other ship.
Like the Philadelphia Experiment.
Gotcha.
In the future.
Exactly. Anything else on episode 5, the last episode Aaron Harberts and Gretchen Berg worked on? I'm so excited to see what the changeover is going to bring.
The only thing I have to add is that I took a still, well, I took a photo of a paused screen, so not a still, but of the 7 drawings that Pike was looking at, and I'm going to send them to you guys because I think that they each represent each anomaly. So.
That could be true.
Yeah.
Nice.
Spock just trying to get some sexy drawings of this red angel he's been seeing for his whole life.
Oh, God. Nope.
Can I pawn far the red angel? Only one way to find out. To boldly go where no Vulcan has gone before.
Right, girl.
Hello, Kiff.
Kiff.
Yeah, if Spock was Zap Brannigan, that'd be great. Well, that was Saints of Imperfection. Thank you,
Joe. Oh, when the Saints go marching in.
Oh, when the Saints lose the games. Hey, Joe, anywhere we can find you guys, find you online if anyone wants to stalk you?
Yeah, most of my stuff is Joe DePenno, WA. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook. Select Joe DePenno at Facebook. And Twitter, it's Joe DePenno, WA.
Definitely cool. Elect Joe DePenno. We need more Trekkies in government.
Elect him all the time. Member.
Yeah, we need to get you president, like we said the last time we had you on.
Yeah, Joe DePenno for president.
Joe for president.
Nah.
Star Trek is mandatory in all schools. The policies we need, the changes we need. Joe DePenno.
It would be a well-funded space program, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yes.
That would be cool. I'm for that.
Yeah, that's why we need Joe DePenno to be president.
Exactly. Just for that. Single platform president.
Star Trek in schools and very good space program. That's all we need.
Switch all our military funding to NASA. Exactly.
Oh, man, that'd be great. Send them all out in space.
Space Force 2!
Sorry, Holly. Michael's going space into space Force. Now.
He's going to be a space marine.
I'm pretty sure he got his jump wings, and he's never doing that again, so I'm pretty sure he's safe here.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do that.
Oh, he'll just be a Mako. It'll be fine.
He'll be a what?
A Mako. It's like the in Star Trek Enterprise where they had the military on the ship.
They're like space marines.
Space marines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the guns. All right, for the show, all our music is provided by Warp 11, except the intro. That's by our friend Dave Wilkes. On social media, you can find the show at facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. On Twitter, the show's at Synthaholic Duo. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our website is, of course, Synthaholics.com. And for Twitter personally, you can find myself at David_J_Duncan. Aaron can be found at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And her website is
HollyMichelleV.wixsite.com/voiceover.
Get some voice acting there.
Hire all of us. Yeah, hire all of us through her site. We'll talk. We'll say things for you.
David, thanks for mentioning Holly's website and all her contact info, because you haven't been doing that lately from what I've been hearing.
Yes.
Oh, I got blackmailed for not doing that thing.
It was probably the Synthahall talking. I don't know.
The Synthahall. Well, and then as
well. I listened to that podcast.
It's funny.
You listened into the outtakes. So people do listen to that.
The outtakes are like the best part.
Yay, yeah. Somebody listens to the outtakes.
I always wonder if anybody goes that far into the episode.
I bet a lot of people do.
Yeah. I always try to put outtakes in so people will listen to the end. They hear the crazy stuff that happens before the show.
Yeah.
Or after the show sometimes, where the outtakes happen.
Right.
Well, please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. Give us 5 stars. Say nice things about us so other people can see us. Also, if you can, go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw us a little money our way, $1 a month. Not much to ask for an episode to listen to us. And then, as always, please let your friends, your family, your roommate, the person down the hall living from you, let them know about our...
At the chapel, you know.
Whatever, yeah. You know. The guy behind the dumpster where you work. Let him know.
The raccoon gorging himself on pizza. Let him know, too.
Okay. As long as they have access to an iPod or podcast.
That's right.
Exactly. Get that raccoon on Synthaholics.
There's a lot of places you can get free Wi-Fi, so.
Sure that.
Did you know you can listen to podcasts on Pandora now?
I knew that, because you said that, I think, on the last podcast.
Oh, did I?
I think you mentioned it, because I remember someone said something about Pandora on podcast.
Yeah, I...
Holly Michelle drinks a lot of Synthahol. She blanks out on things.
She's like... said that before?
I said that
once. I think it... credit was in the outtakes, so, or the end of that. Yeah.
Oh, who knows what ends up in those.
Right.
All right, well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Joe, for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you're elected president.
We all do here at Synthaholics. Hopefully our listeners will help get you voted in the president, too. We need more Trekkies in politics, for sure.
Don't hold your breath, but thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Recording. Actually, let me make sure that played.
Freshly picked out of the cabbages.
Out of the cabbages.
Oh, it's another fresh recording.
We did it. An hour and 20 minutes.
We did it.
Amazing show.
Wow, that was that long. I didn't feel it. I felt that this seemed to go real quick this time.
Yeah.
It was quick, because our last couple have been closer to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Once I hit the stop button on the record.
My father-in-law asked Michael today how long it takes us to record. If you want to know Michael's response,
fucking forever.
He says, "Well, it kind of depends on how much Holly drinks."
And how much jam do you drink tonight?
I only had a glass of scotch. In water, so...
A glass of
8 ounces of scotch, that's good.
That's well, great. I mean, it wasn't a full 8 ounces of scotch. Jesus.
Yeah. You'd be on the floor
you said,
right now.
You said a glass of scotch. Yeah. You know, I just...
Yeah, I found, I walked into the grocery store today, and I was going to grab a bottle of wine, and I saw this, like, frosty blue Johnny Walker, and it's Game of Thrones White Walker Johnny Walker. It's okay.
Oh, nice.
It's not terrible. It's funny, because the label's like, you know, the profile develops as it comes to room temperature, but I'm not sure if that's the case. I think you just get used to it.
The drunker you get, the better it tastes.
Right. I normally drink Jameson or wine or red wine.
Wow. Good for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's not normally the drink I hear, but anyway, no.
Yeah.
I was expecting more of a margarita route or something like that.
Right. I really want to learn how to make
margaritas. I made her margaritas for her birthday last year.
Oh, nice.
You did.
I did.
What do you want to learn to make, though, Holly?
Martinis.
Oh, yeah. I love a good martini. Vodka martini.
I've never had one. So you prefer vodka over gin?
I do, yeah. Okay. I've had gin martinis before, but they just don't taste as good. Vodka, I like it shaken. I like it dirty with the olive juice. And yeah,
I feel like that's why I love olives.
Yeah, get it dirty. If you tried it just straight up, it's pretty strong. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more tasty with the olive juice in it.
I've never had a martini. I've never made one, mostly because I've never bought olives or vermouth.
Yeah, gotta have both.
I buy lots of vodka and gin, though, because I make Long Islands and other things that call for them, but I've never made a martini, or at least a standard martini.
I've never tasted, actually, well, I've not a traditional martini. I've had, like, I don't know, some crazy wildflower martini with star fruit at an ice bar once, but it didn't taste like a martini. It was like vodka and starfruit.